ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So tonight, we are giving our final evening seminar of our 2005 Suva Seminar Series. Tonight we are talking about the importance of the spiritual master by studying Chapter 4, text number 34. Tadvidi pranipatena Pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnananastatvadarshinah. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth, purport. The path of spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult. The Lord therefore advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of disciplic succession from the Lord himself. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following this principle of disciplic succession. The Lord is the original spiritual master, and a person in the disciplic succession can convey the message of the Lord as it is to his disciple. No one can be spiritually realized by manufacturing his own process, as is the fashion of the foolish pretenders. This is really a fact. We'll just stop in the middle of the reading of the purport. This is so much a fact that nowadays people think they can be spiritually realized by manufacturing their own system. This person told me that well, we will discuss that later. They are thinking that on their own realization, they can achieve perfection. If someone is drowning in the middle of the ocean, and they think they will swim for it on their own, is that a very smart idea? Someone drops you off in the water halfway between Fiji and Australia and says, swim for it. And you say, yeah, I'm going to swim for it. I'm going to swim back to Nandi or, you know, Reiki or whatever, Mombasa. How far is it between here and Australia? 1,000 miles? 2,000 miles? 3,000? How many miles? 4 hours flight. It takes 2 hours just to fly half the distance between here and Australia. And how fast do those airplanes go? And you're going to swim? You see? So people think, yes, I will do it on my own. I don't need guru. I will tell the guru what he can do and what he cannot do. You see, I'm so advanced in Krishna consciousness. I will instruct the spiritual master. As soon as one takes that proud attitude of thinking that they can tell the spiritual master what he can do and what he cannot do, their spiritual life is absolutely finished. Doesn't matter if they're chanting japa, following the principles of whatever they're doing. If you become an offender against the spiritual master, your spiritual life is dead, completely dead. I don't care if you're going to Mangalarti every day. I don't care if you're what you may be doing. If one becomes an offender against the spiritual master, you're finished. Absolutely finished. Yasha prasadat bhagavat prasado, yasha prasada nagati kutopi. By the mercy of the spiritual master, one receives the benediction of Krishna. Without the grace of the spiritual master, no one can make any advancement. Cannot be. Absolutely cannot be. Someone may think, well, having a spiritual master is all right for you, but I don't need one. You see, for you, obviously, it's a good thing. You needed one. But I don't. You see, I have some special qualification that means I don't need a spiritual master. Oh, so you're more advanced than Arjuna, my dear sir? You're a greater transcendentalist than Arjuna, who is a personal associate of Lord Krishna? You're more advanced than Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who showed the example of taking a guru, Sandipani Muni? Or Lord Chaitanya, who showed the example of taking a guru, Ishvarapuri? You're more advanced? You see? You're more advanced than Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, who's a Nitya Siddha, one of a ray of Vishnu, one of Lord Vishnu's personal stock, who was sent to assist Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who showed the example by becoming a disciple of Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. You think you're more advanced than Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati? Good luck. That's all I can say. Good luck. If you think you're so advanced, you don't need a spiritual master. That you can ignore the instructions of Krishna. And it is reconfirmed in the Adi Purana. Krishna is again speaking to Arjuna in the Adi Purana. The one who is my devotee is not my devotee. But the devotee of my devotee is my actual devotee. Someone may say, well, you needed ISKCON in order to become Krishna conscious because you weren't born in India. I became Krishna conscious before I met ISKCON, so I don't need ISKCON. Tell me how to become Krishna conscious. Well, the fact is there's different levels of being Krishna conscious. There's Kanishta Adhikari, Majjhama Adhikari, and Uttama Adhikari. The fact is there are millions of people who are Krishna conscious, who are not members of ISKCON. They celebrate Janmashtami. They go to Tirupati. They're Krishna conscious. Like that gambler who bet on the horses. He went to Tirupati and he made a deal with Lord Venkateshwara. He said, my dear Lord, I'm betting on the horse, and if he wins, I will split the prize money with you. So the prize money was 50,000 rupees for first place. So his horse came in second place, and the prize money for second place was 25,000 rupees. So he went back to the Lord. He said, my dear Lord, you didn't trust me. You've already taken your half. He didn't give one rupee to Venkateshwara. And my Lord, why are you not trusting me? And that's why he cheated. This is the Krishna consciousness. You see, it's conniving businessman's mentality. You think, yes, I am Krishna conscious. I pray to Krishna. You see, one man in the Delhi airport, he very proudly told me, he was a young, bright-faced brahmachari back in, 1980. A young, fired-up young brahmachari, bright-faced brahmachari. He looked at me and he said, you people don't really know anything. He said, we are all Krishna here. Can only think, oh boy, Prabhupada really knows what's going on. These people are so Mayavad. He was telling me that everybody here in India is Krishna. And you people don't know anything. You ISKCON, naive ISKCON, you know, bubbly brahmacharis don't know anything. The fact is that we didn't know anything. But by the mercy of taking shelter at the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master, we became the recipients of the knowledge of everything, perfect knowledge. That's a fact. I was also Krishna conscious. It's like Indians are Krishna conscious before they found out about ISKCON. I was also Krishna conscious before I found out about ISKCON. But my quality of Krishna consciousness was very low. I was offering my food. I was chanting Hare Krishna before I knew there was a Hare Krishna movement. Some friend taught me. Who had heard it from someone, who had heard it from someone, who had heard it from the devotee. So indirectly I got it from the devotee. But my Krishna consciousness was contaminated with Sahaja and Mayavad. It was contaminated. It wasn't pure bhakti. So the fact is, many people are Krishna conscious outside of ISKCON. Outside of the guidance of Srila Prabhupada. But their Vaishnavism, their Krishna consciousness, is contaminated with Sahaja and Mayavad. That's a fact. Because they haven't taken, they think that on their own they can be Krishna conscious. They don't realize that Krishna is giving the formula how to be Krishna conscious. They don't want to realize it. They want to take Krishna consciousness means you do your duty. Because I go to work and I make money and I support my family, therefore I am Krishna Bhakta. Krishna says, do your duty. But the problem is they fail to note the second half of the verse. Do your duty and offer the result to me. They do their duty and they put it all their own, the result in their own pocket. And they think, yes, I am a very good devotee. We actually had that experience in Texas. One of our members, who kind of fizzled out on us, you'll see why in a minute, he opened a shop. He laid aside his career with the power and electric company there, and he opened a shop. Thought he'd try his hand at being an entrepreneur. So we said, why don't you give the first, the proceeds of your first sale every day to Lord Krishna, be very auspicious. He said, yes, very good idea. So he bought him a donation box in his shop there, and he started doing that. Every day the proceeds from the first sale would go to Krishna. Very auspicious blessing for his store, his business. So after some time, he came to collect the donations to the temple. He said, oh, I don't have it. I gave it to my brother. I said, what? He said, yes, my brother is Krishna. So, in this way, people have their own ideas of Krishna consciousness. They have their own idea of what is the meaning of Krishna. They think everyone is Krishna, or my family members are Krishna. They actually have that saying, Dharidra Narayan, by feeding the poor, I'm feeding Krishna. The beggar on the street, if I feed him, then that is the best service to Krishna. One of my students, a young girl in Bangalore, her brother found out that she was donating 250 rupees every week to buy flowers for the deities of the temple. And he said, Krishna will be more pleased if you feed the poor. He told her, this is stupid what you're doing, buying flowers for the deities. You should feed the poor and that will please Krishna more. So this is the stupidity. They think they know how to please Krishna. The fact is, until you take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, you don't know anything about pleasing Krishna. Zip, zero, nada, as they say in Spanish. Nothing. Nothing at all do you know about pleasing Krishna. You will never please Krishna until you take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. That's a fact. Insanity. This insane condition. Yes, I know how to please Krishna. Continue reading the purport here. The Bhagavatam 6.3.19 says, Dharman Hishakshad Bhagamat Pranitam. The path of religion is directly enunciated by the Lord. Therefore, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot help lead one to the right path. Nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. That's why ISKCON is so important. Because we are giving the proper training. If somebody wants to gain a proper understanding of the scripture, we are giving that education. But if they think they don't need it, that they can just on their own speculate, they will never make any progress in spiritual life. Never. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender. In other words, you don't tell the guru, don't preach to me. Don't try to enlighten me with transcendental knowledge. Don't think that you know something that I don't know. You can't tell your spiritual master that. And one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Do you realize the full ramifications of that statement? Is that sunk into everyone's brain? The significance of that statement? The secret of advancement. This is one of those insider secrets Prabhupada is giving us. All you have to do is satisfy your spiritual master. That's all you have to do. Nothing else is required. Nothing else. Nothing else required. You may be a total failure from the external viewpoint. Complete total failure. But if your spiritual master was satisfied by what you did, and you've achieved the topmost success. Do you know that when Srila Prabhupada came to America, he told us this. I was personally with Prabhupada in Atlanta in 1975. He told us in that gathering in Atlanta that when he came to America, he was thinking. Actually, he explained first that when his godbrothers had gone to England on the order of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they had preached to one Lord Dutland. Actually, Prabhupada could not say that with his Bengali tongue. He said Lord Jetland. Apparently the Bengalis cannot pronounce the Z. So he said Lord Jetland. It's actually Lord Zetland. Z-E or Z they also say. Z-E. Lord Zetland is spelled Zetland. So anyway, Prabhupada said Lord Jetland. They approached Lord Jetland. They were meeting with him. He had been in India during the British rule period as the governor of Bengal. So he knew about something about Varnashram. So he told, or he actually asked the godbrother of Prabhupada. He said, Swamiji, because he knew that Brahman was the big cream of the crop. You know, if you're a Brahman, that's very high prestige. He said, Swamiji, can you make me a Brahman? And Prabhupada's godbrother said, yes. If you follow these principles, no illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling, it can make you a Brahman. And Lord Zetman immediately replied, impossible. That is not possible. So Prabhupada told us, he was thinking when he came to this country, America. He said, I was thinking when I came to your country, as soon as I tell them no illicit sex life, no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling, they immediately say, please go home. So Prabhupada was thinking he would not be successful, but then he said, I was thinking, but let me try. And then, when Prabhupada said that, I was thinking, because Prabhupada tried, therefore we were all saved. And so I said, Jai. And then everybody in the room thought that was an appropriate moment to say Jai, and the whole room, 300 devotees, all said Jai. I started it, and everybody else joined, echoed it after I said it. Because it was a really appropriate moment to say Jai, because Prabhupada's trying was what saved us. You see. We were saved because Prabhupada agreed to try, even though he was convinced he would be a failure. He tried. Even if Prabhupada had been a failure and had not been successful in starting this movement, still, because he risked everything to try to do that, he was already successful, you see. The sincere endeavor is success. It doesn't depend on the result. But generally, sincere endeavor will sooner or later meet with a successful result. That's also there. It's not that somebody can go out on book distribution and come back, you know, and having done nothing. You know, 10 devotees went out and everyone did a lot of books and one devotee didn't do anything. And he said, well, maybe he doesn't really try sincerely. So success is a sign of purity. That's a fact. One who is actually pure will be blessed with success. But not always. There are notable cases when pure devotees had no success. Look at Jhansi, Prabhupada and Jhansi. There was no success. He tried with all sincerity, and it was a failure. Even Lord Chaitanya was a failure in Navadvip, and he left and went elsewhere for preaching. He wasn't able to be successful in Navadvip. The atmosphere in Navadvip was not conducive for his preaching work. So he left. So the real point is the sincere, the order of the spiritual master, if it is taken with all sincerity, with all determination, with all patience, with all enthusiasm, one tries to, the best of one's intelligence to carry out the order of the spiritual master, he's satisfied to see this servant is sincerely trying. And that's all it takes. If you have that sincerity to sincerely try to please the spiritual master, then you will advance in spiritual life. And really, it's all we have to do. And now Prabhupada gives another formula on how to get spiritual understanding. This is a very important principle. Because unless we have spiritual understanding, we won't know how to satisfy the spiritual master. So how does one get spiritual understanding? This is a very important principle. One gets spiritual understanding by inquiries and submission. Inquiry is an important thing. And being submissive, these are important. And Prabhupada continues, he says, unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. So Prabhupada has commented sometimes, you should not take knowledge from the spiritual master gratis. There's an obligation when you receive knowledge from the spiritual master to give in return. You see? To give some monetary contribution, or to give some gift, or to give some service. You see? These things are important for the actual awakening of transcendental knowledge within the heart of the disciple. There has to be some service given. You can give money, you can give gifts, you can give a flower garland, you see? You can give service. So there has to be some way of giving something to the spiritual master. Giving service. Because that enables what you've heard now to not just be some theoretical thing which goes in one ear and out the other ear. It enables it to actually go within the heart and become realized knowledge. It's a very important principle. Without that service to the learned spiritual master, the actual realization of transcendental knowledge will not take place. Prabhupada continues, one must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master. And when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. So what is that test? Is there some, you know, something I can look up, some, you know, the 13 questions, or what is that test? Well, it depends. This is a test in a very broad, it's not that it's some special exam, some, you know, quiz. But it really varies with each individual. Krishna arranges a test for you. Something that tests your sincerity. If you approach the spiritual master with a genuine desire for spiritual realization, Krishna will put some test. You see, where your faith will be tested. Are you really willing to put your faith? There'll be some point where you have to pass a test. In other words, you have to go beyond your ordinary comfort zone. In this material world, we have our comfort zone. You know, I'm an American. I'm Fijian, I'm Indian, I'm male, I'm female, I'm 43, I'm 28. We're comfortable with these concepts. I'm a college professor, you know, I'm a restaurant manager, you know. We're comfortable with these concepts. When we come to a bona fide spiritual master, he pulls the rug out from under us. My dear Sarah, I beg to inform you, you're not really who you think you are. And those things that we felt comfortable with and secure with, which are really false security, you see. Those things we were hanging on to, that false sense of security, now the spiritual master pulls the rug out from under us. And we can reject him, reject his words of wisdom, or we can put a little faith and say, well, let me check this out. Maybe there's something here which will take me to a higher level of consciousness. We don't say you have to put blind faith, but we do say you have to be intellectually daring. That we do say. You have to be willing to have all your cherished philosophical preconceptions smashed, if necessary, to awaken higher consciousness within your heart. You have to be a daring consciousness voyager, consciousness explorer. If you want to expand your consciousness, you can't hold on to your philosophical comfort zone like a little child who's attached to a blanket. You have to be willing to let go of your toys. A child grows up and gives up his attachment for his toys. But the trouble is, as adults, we still have our toys that we're attached to. Philosophical toys. We have to be willing to give up all of our toys and become fully mature in spiritual knowledge. So these are tests. Can we actually lay aside all preconceived ideas of what is true and what is not true, and go into that level of realization where we can actually directly experience the absolute truth? So we have to pass some tests in order to enter into that state of consciousness. In this verse, both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. Many times people say, well, you know, I can't blindly accept anything. Many people have the foolish idea that we want people to blindly accept our philosophy. There's nothing that can be further from the truth. I was trained by Vishnu Janaswami, and Prabhupada confirmed, he said, you have been trained under the expert guidance of Vishnu Jana Maharaj. And the way he trained me was this, he said, your intelligence has to be satisfied. He never told me to blindly accept. In fact, when I told him, I said, I think I want to be a devotee now. I'd like to be a devotee. Did he say, great, that's wonderful? No. You know what he said? He said, what I'm afraid of is easy come, easy go. I was a little surprised when he said that. I thought he said, oh, that's great. You want to be a devotee? That's wonderful. Jai. He didn't say that. He said, what I'm afraid of is easy come, easy go. So he let me know, you know, we don't like people who come too easily to Krishna consciousness, because they also go too easily. We like people who use their intelligence, who take their time and use their intelligence, get their intelligence fully satisfied. Because those people never go. Once a person has had complete philosophical understanding of this philosophy, they will never leave Krishna consciousness. If you look at the numbers of ISKCON, it appears that most people never had a deep philosophical realization. It appears that most of the membership came on a sentimental basis. Easy come, easy go. But I guarantee you, those devotees who've had deep philosophical understanding, they will never leave this movement. You can't budge them, because they understand that any position besides complete surrender at the lotus feet of Guru and Krishna is absolutely philosophically asinine position. They realize that with full logic and understanding. Not blindly, but with full realization. So these are very profound words of Srila Prabhupada. Not only should one hear submissively from the spiritual master, but one must also get a clear understanding from him. You see. This is the point. Not just sentimentalism, but you have to clearly understand the philosophy. Clearly. And in submission and service and inquiries, that's how it actually happens. A bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind toward the disciple. Actually, a bona fide spiritual master doesn't have any ulterior motive. He's not after money. He's not after followers. He's not after women. All he wants to do is help people. He's simply motivated by love and compassion. That's all. That's his only motive. He cannot stand to see people suffering. He himself is tasting so much bliss and so much nectar, and he sees all around him a world in which people are miserable like anything. Prabhupada used to take the morning walk in Melbourne, and he would see the people on Monday morning, on the morning commute, and he started crying, understanding the position they were in. And it's actually horrible what people go through in this material world, how unhappy they are. I remember one time I was doing some part-time work to help support our center. And the employees, they would put some picture of a South Sea island, like Fiji or something, you know, in front of their cubicle. But yes, I will, you know, go on a vacation to the South Seas, to, you know, one of those South Sea islands like Fiji or wherever. And that would inspire them to struggle through all the work. And here the people in Fiji, they're putting up something of Australia or New Zealand on their wall, you know. Nobody is happy in this material world. No one is actually happy. And we're just thinking, yeah, it's somewhere else. In North America, they're thinking, yeah, when I can get to Fiji, then I'll really be happy. The Blue Lagoon. The people in Fiji are thinking, yes, when I can get to Australia or New Zealand, then I will be happy. The people in Australia, they're thinking, when I can get somewhere else. No one is happy in this material world. Everyone is suffering. But if we can take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and by his mercy be enlightened in transcendental knowledge, then we will actually taste the happiness. We are actually looking for a spiritual master, bona fide guru. That's what we're actually looking for. That person who can reveal to us everything about God and our relationship with God. And then Prabhupada concludes his beautiful, profound purport. Therefore, when the student is submissive and is always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. So that's the key. You need to find a person that you can submit yourself to. Sometimes I have people that put, you know, they put themselves in the mode of being my disciples, but then they want me to submit to them. You see? Like a mutual admiration society. That I, the Gurudev, I will flatter you, and then you can flatter me. That is not guru-disciple. Guru means that place where you completely surrender with no argument. You cannot argue with the spiritual man. If you're thinking you can still argue with this person, then he is not, that is not the guru-disciple relationship. In the beginning, you can place argument. When you're defeated, you must accept. Prabhupada placed argument to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. If you have objection, if you have, you know, it doesn't make sense to you what the spiritual master is saying, then you should say something. So he can either he'll be defeated and shown not to be a bona fide spiritual master, or you'll be shown to be a fool. You see? Actually, one god brother, he came to see Prabhupada in Los Angeles. And he was a very proud man, young man. He'd been a football player. He was a big man on the college campus. You know, real, very expert in debate. And a very intelligent man. So he was thinking, well, I'm going to test the Swami. See if he's really a guru. He has to be able to do this, this, this. He has to be able to predict the future. He has to be able to read my mind. He had a whole list of things the guru had to be able to do. Be a bona fide guru, his conception of a bona fide guru. You see? So So he came into Prabhupada's quarters in Los Angeles. The whole room was filled up with sannyasis and senior leaders. And he was just sitting there with his long, curly hippie hair down to his shoulders. And Prabhupada, out of the blue, Prabhupada had great powers of understanding. Prabhupada just out of the blue, he said, "Why are you such a creepina?" Out of the blue. He hadn't said a word. Prabhupada said, "Why are you such a creepina?" He challenged him. And he was shocked. You know, everyone kind of moved. There was so much energy, heavy thunderbolt energy coming out of Prabhupada towards this young boy, Randy. Everybody else kind of moved out of the way, you know. They didn't want to be in the lane of all these thunderbolts coming across the room. They kind of made a little space. So these thunderbolts were coming between Prabhupada. And Prabhupada completely smashed him. He tried arguing with Prabhupada and then Prabhupada actually covered all four points without him even bringing them up. All the four points that he had listed would be the requirement for a bona fide guru. Prabhupada actually did all four of them without him even saying anything. He didn't ask about any of the four, but Prabhupada just, in the course of his smashing this boy, all four points were covered. And he was totally smashed and defeated, and he angrily got up and stormed out and got in his car and just started heading back to Laguna Beach. Completely like angry. But then as he was driving for a while, I think he maybe had gotten home, but he realized, "Well, you know what?" He said, "You've just been defeated. Why don't you just take it? You know? You were defeated. So why don't you just admit it?" So he came back the next day with a $1,000 donation to give to Prabhupada. To appreciate, actually, this great spiritual master. But then he gave it to Rameshwar. He didn't want to give it directly to Prabhupada. He just gave it to Rameshwar. Rameshwar said, don't you want to come up and see him? He would like to see. He said, no. So we have to actually, to become a disciple means we have to be willing to be defeated. As Prabhupada was defeated by Bhakti Siddhanta, he challenged him. He said, "Why do you want to spread this Krishna Bhakti?" He challenged Bhakti Siddhanta. This is not the right time for Krishna Bhakti movement. This is now the time for independence movement. Can you imagine telling Bhakti Siddhanta he's doing the wrong thing? Prabhupada was a pretty bold young man. He's wearing his white khadi. "Yes, I am a Gandhian." You know, white khadi dhoti. He didn't even show up to accept his degree. He graduated. He passed all the exams. He wouldn't even show up to accept the degree. It's a British tainted degree. I went from Scottish Church's College. I'm not going to touch that contaminated degree. You see. They can keep their damn piece of paper. It was damn British. I mean, he had a really cocky young, you know, anti-British attitude, pro-Gandhi attitude. But Bhakti Siddhanta completely smashed it. And Prabhupada realized he had been defeated. And he accepted it. Totally accepted that, "Yes, I have met a great saintly guru." For that moment in his heart, he accepted, "Yes, this is my spiritual master. This is my guru." And even though he didn't get initiated until 11 years later, he was always thinking, "Yes, this is my spiritual master." He's always worshipping him in his heart at every minute. So unless we're willing to be completely defeated, have the philosophical rug pulled out from under us, don't take a guru like a pet. Don't take a guru. There's enough pet dogs already going around Suva. If you want a pet, you get a dog. Don't take a guru. A pet dog is better anyway. If that's the level you're on, you can keep him as a watchdog at your house also. Keep the burglars away. Don't take a guru as a pet dog. Guru means that place where you're willing to be completely defeated and completely surrender without any argument. The beginning, you make argument to test, to express your doubts. But when you're defeated, you must accept it. Otherwise, there's no meaning of guru disciple. And once you've accepted, and after that, to that point, there's no question of argument. Once you've taken, yes, you're my guru, then there's no question of argument. Once you've accepted. So, we can ask now if there's some questions. We can leave the fans on if somebody will make the questions very audible for me. So, are there any questions? Yes, you have a question. I can hear you. I'll try. Go ahead and ask it.
You said Srila Prabhupada is saying that submissive inquiry not challenging.
Yes. So why am I saying you can? I'm saying that one may, who's not yet accepted a guru, may bring forward his challenges. Huh?
Shouldn't that challenge be in a submissive mood?
Something?
Submissive.
Submissive inquiry, it should be actually, yes.
Challenge.
Yeah. I'm just saying that one, if one has some doubts, you should bring them out. That's what I'm saying. It should be done in a submissive way, that's right. But we see that, sometimes when one hasn't accepted the person as a guru, when Prabhupada said why Prabhupada was not submissively accepting Bhakti Siddhanta, he actually challenged him at first and was defeated by him. You see? He said, who will hear your Chaitanya's message? Is that submissive? He was telling Bhakti Siddhanta, this is wrong. You should support Gandhi's movement instead of this Chaitanya's movement. Right now is more important Gandhi. But as soon as he was defeated, he accepted it.
Accepted the defeat.
Now, we don't encourage you to make challenges because, you know, but we're saying if someone comes forward with their doubts and they do challenge, if they're sincere and they're defeated, they'll accept it. My point is that happens. People do that. That's the nature in this world. That's not the recommended way to approach the spiritual master. But even if one does feel, has some feeling, and brings it out, then one should be willing, then one has to hear the answer. One has to respectfully hear the answer. One may have an objection who's not yet a disciple. Yeah.
The
that's right.
The
it has to be done in a gentlemanly way.
Yeah. But the answer is one we respect.
Right. No. If one is a gentleman, he may have objection. Let's say he's not a disciple, but he's a gentleman. So he may have some objection, but Swamiji, I feel this is wrong. That's an objection. But it should be presented in a gentlemanly way. Where it's an open-minded discussion at least. You know, and Swamiji, I feel this is wrong for this reason. And if a person is in the proper attitude of a gentleman, then he's willing to hear the other side also. And if the argument is convincing to him, then he will accept. If he's genuinely open-minded, anyone who is genuinely open-minded, if they actually hear the teachings of Krishna, they will accept. That's a fact. If explained to them in the proper way, and they're in the proper mood of open-minded hearing, submissive hearing, even if they have an objection, and they bring it forward. If they have it, if they're done it in a gentlemanly way, then they will, as Prabhupada did. Prabhupada, we can sure, was not arrogant in his attitude. He just expressed his honest understanding of the situation. And because he was not arrogant, he was open-minded, and he was submissive to the words of Bhakti Siddhanta. When he heard the argument, it made all the sense in the world to him, and he immediately accepted, yes, this is my spiritual master. So we don't... Sometimes when we have the questions, I openly say, are there any objections? I'm willing to hear objections. Because we can defeat all of them.
The way it is presented.
Huh?
The way it is presented to the spiritual master.
Yeah, the mood is will make you or break you. That's right. If one remains a proud, arrogant attitude, then one will never be able to become spiritually enlightened. One may have a disagreement or a misunderstanding or an objection, but if these are brought forward in a submissive way, in an open-minded discussion, one is willing to hear and consider there may be some higher understanding beyond what I have, then one can be enlightened by the spiritual master.
So it depends on
the attitude. The attitude. As if we spoke the other way. Attitude, not aptitude, determines your altitude. If you have the right attitude, even if you don't have a PhD, you're okay. And if you have the right attitude, even if you have a PhD, you're okay. Because the attitude, that submissive attitude, is what will make you take you to a high spiritual level. You just have the submissive attitude and have a bona fide guru. Those two things will take you to a very high level of spiritual realization. Questions more? Yes.
What happens to the spiritual life of a disciple who would like to take or obeys the instruction, the guidance, the advice of the spiritual master that the disciple likes and may not follow the advice, the instruction, the disciple doesn't like?
So if one picks and chooses, well, this order of Guru Maharaj I very much like, I will do that. In this order I do not like, I will not do that. Then they are called Ardha Kukuti Nyayi. They are an adherent of the logic known as half-hen logic. Ardha Kukuti Nyayi. You see? So, the farmer, he had the hen, and it was laying very nice eggs. Big eggs, many eggs. He was so happy with his hen. So many wonderful eggs, but there was another problem. This hen was eating so much. And it was costing him so much money to feed the hen. So he got a very good idea. I will cut off the head. And then I won't have to feed the hen anymore. I'll just take the eggs. So the disciple thinks, oh, Guru Maharaj, these orders I like very much. Take prasadam. You see, now that order I like very much. Take prasadam. I see this. I will take prasadam. But the order gives service to the Vaishnavas. Oh no, that order I don't like. I will just take prasadam. They will lose their spiritual life. You have to take all the orders. You have to accept Guru Maharaj in toto, not pick and choose. One of the offenses is to disobey. The third offense against the holy name is to disobey the orders of Guru. It doesn't say to disobey some of the orders of Guru. So to disobey the orders of Guru, that means all the instructions must be followed. Questions more? Yes.
Yeah.
views of spiritual master, like the views of the husband, is different from the views of the spiritual master, which you cannot express it.
Woman is supposed to follow the husband.
Yes.
But if the views of the husband is different from the views of the spiritual master, whom would she follow?
Yes. Well, if both of the gurus are within ISKCON, the gurus will coordinate with each other. So you'll have a happy marriage because we're all working together as a team in ISKCON. Let's say, you know, I was your spiritual master and Veer Krishna Maharaj was your wife's guru, for example. If that was the case, then Veer Krishna Maharaj and I would coordinate how we would coordinate our guidance of you and your wife so that it would be perfect harmony.
Prabhuji is asking that the wife is supposed to be following the husband.
Yes.
In the scripture it is like that the wife follows the husband and you know,
yes,
the way she can have perfection. But like say both the husband and the wife are...
See, the ideal standard is actually the husband and wife both take diksha together from the same spiritual master.
But what if
they act as one unit.
But what if although it's the same spiritual master, but the husband's view and the spiritual master's view are different.
The husband's...
I can explain. The husband's view is different from the spiritual master. So whether the wife should follow the husband or the spiritual master.
Well, see, the spiritual master will instruct the wife to follow her husband. You see? For example, if you and your wife became my disciples, you see, I would train you to follow me perfectly. And I would train your wife to follow you perfectly. That's how I would do it.
But if the spiritual master and the husband...
Huh?
If the spiritual master's and husband's views are differing, then...
If they're two different gurus?
No.
Views? Now let Manaji only speak one person at a time.
If the view of the husband...
The view.
Yes.
V-I-E-W. View.
Yes. Is it different than the spiritual master? Then who should...
If the husband has a different view from the spiritual master.
Yes.
So that means he's not a disciple then.
Mm.
Okay. In other words, if you were not a disciple but your wife was, then, you know, that kind of a scenario. You were not an initiated disciple, but your wife was.
Yeah.
Is that the case?
Yeah.
Oh, that is? Your wife is an initiated disciple?
No. What I'm saying is, suppose the views of the husband
are different from the guru's views.
Yeah. Right? So who does the wife follow?
Okay. All right.
The husband might not be initiated.
All right.
These are not different situations.
I understand what he said. Okay. The husband's not initiated.
May not.
Yes. Is the husband willing to allow the wife to follow the four regulated principles? No illicit sex, no meeting, no intoxication, no gambling?
We really don't have this. It's a very general question.
Yeah, well, we have to get specific now. If it's a situation where the husband is willing to allow the wife to follow the four regulated principles, then it makes it much easier.
Suppose we have a case where...
Because...
The husband is not initiated.
Okay, that's what I'm talking about now. See, the relationship with a husband is for one lifetime only, but guru-disciple relationship is eternal.
Does that mean the wife should disobey the husband?
Huh?
That means, should the wife disobey the husband?
The spiritual master will instruct the wife to serve her husband so nicely that he will feel that, I'm so glad my wife became an initiated devotee because she's the best, I've never seen a wife that's this wonderful. My friends' wives are not initiated the devotees, and they don't serve me as well as she does. You see, that's how I train my disciples. I have that case. I have a disciple, a Gujarati woman. Her husband's not initiated. She is. So I have the exact situation that you're talking about. I already have that going on with one of my disciples. So the way I've trained her is that you should give such nice service to your wife and your children that you'll just be thinking that, wow, how fortunate I am that my wife is an initiated devotee, because she never served me like this before. You'd just be feeling, wow, this is fantastic. I'm really glad she got initiated because she never served me like this before. That's the solution. A devotee is the best of everything. Devotee is the best husband, the best wife, the best professor, the best boss, the best politician, the best everything. The best laundry merchant, you know, laundry wala, whatever. A devotee is the best of everything. Whatever he does, he becomes the best. So if a woman becomes, a wife becomes a devotee, that means she becomes the best wife in the whole world. She gives service to the husband like he couldn't even believe a wife could serve with this much love and devotion. Because she doesn't see you as your body anymore. She sees you as an eternal spiritual being. And she wants to inspire you to also perfect your life. So to give you all encouragement, she serves you like unbelievable love and devotion. That's the answer. Yes. Yes, yes.
So, what you are saying is after one becomes a devotee, serve the husband and all those things.
Then, after a devotee, then what?
After one becomes a devotee, she serves the husband and all the
devotees. The husband tells her to stop chanting her rounds?
Yeah, the husband may want illicit sex.
The husband wants to have illicit sex? Oh, she has to disobey the husband then. If he wants to have illicit sex after she took the vow, tough luck. You have to go to a prostitute. The husband's not doing his duty. The husband has to, according to Bhagavatam, the husband's duty is to deliver the wife from birth and death. If he's standing in the way of her deliverance, he's not being a proper husband. He's not. He's hurting her. He's doing violence. If he really loves his wife, then he will honor her initiation vow. No, the wife should stay with her husband and maintain her vows, that's all. We never tell the wives to leave their husband. I never do that. We don't want to break up families. We want to make families perfect. That's our mission. We want to make the family life perfect. Ours is not a family breaking movement. Ours is a family making movement. We want to make the family stronger. More loving, more close. That's our mission. Sometimes people think, well, you become a devotee, you have to, you know, you can't have close relationships with anyone, you just have to only love Krishna. No. A devotee becomes the most loving of all personality. The most friendly, the most loving person is the devotee. Because he sees beyond the temporary covering, he actually loves the eternal spiritual being within. Therefore, the most loving person is Krishna's devotee. So if your wife becomes a devotee, she'll become more loving, not artificially, but genuinely, she will become 1,000 times more loving before she was a devotee. She's actually fixed in Krishna bhakti. Yeah.
I think it's got a problem for the wife. The wife will love the husband more, but the husband will, his desire won't be fulfilled, so he won't love the wife.
Yes, it can be a problem for the husband. He thinks, what is this useless wife? Let me get rid of her.
So the scriptures, I think, as far as my understanding is, that a son should listen to the father, a wife should listen to the husband. But where? For high purpose. If the instructions are not to meet the high purpose, then you should discard this kind of father and wife.
Yeah, Krishna says that give up all their obligations, just surrender to me. If the husband is an impediment for the wife's emancipation, then according to Bhagavad Gita, she should give up that duty of following the husband. Krishna says, sarva dharman parityaja, give up all duties and surrender to me. We don't want to break families up, but if the husband insists on the wife remaining in sinful activities, then she'll be forced to give him up. But we see that actually, we've seen many marriages where one spouse was into it and the other wasn't. But over a period of time, I mean, even today we visited one family where the son was so against Krishna consciousness, he wouldn't let his mother even sit in the car with tilak on her forehead. And now he's a very wonderful devotee. So it happens sometimes. One family member takes it up and the other family members are totally irate and they can't handle it. They can't understand it. They can't relate to it. But if that one family member remains fixed in Krishna consciousness and continues to share the mercy of Krishna, then everyone will come around sooner or later.
I read somewhere, I'm not quite sure, but you can correct me if I'm wrong. Prabhupada says, if a father and a son have fallen into the water, and the father knows if he tries to save the son, he'll drown himself too. So at that time you leave the son, you just save yourself.
I don't know that example, but you're saying the father will risk his own life to save the son?
The father and son fall into the water.
Yeah.
And father knows if he tries to save his son, then he might drown too.
Yeah.
So he, at that time he just save his life and he get out. Let the son drown.
Is it? Well, I know there's some statement that one person can be sacrificed to save a whole village. That's also stated.
You do your best, but where it's not possible, you just have to live. The final is that we should perfect our life. The final. It's my understanding, but if I'm wrong, then you can.
Now, if family life is, and if some relationship we have in the material world, we've tried everything possible to maintain our Krishna consciousness and keep that relationship intact, and they're adamantly preventing us from practicing Krishna consciousness, then we may have to put that relationship on hold for a while, you know, let it become deactivated for a while.
We can see, for example, he left the wife.
Yeah.
And he thought that the wife.
Yeah.
He tried it back.
Now, we may have to deactivate some relationships. You know, my family wasn't very happy. I mean, in one sense they were, but you know, my grandmother said, "Why didn't you become a Christian preacher?" You know? I had to not listen to my grandmother to become a devotee. Even though normally you're obliged to your grandparents. They want me to be a Christian preacher, I guess I'll have to do that. Because grandmother wants me to be a Christian preacher, not a Hare Krishna preacher. See, if I had fulfilled the ordinary social obligations, I wouldn't be here. I'd be caught up in the cycle of birth and death. So the ordinary obligations we have to wife, to family, to husband, to grandparents, we try to fulfill them as far as possible for social upkeep and to encourage those people in their spiritual advancement. But if they remain adamantly opposed and an impediment for our spiritual emancipation, then we have to slip out of those entanglements. I never destroyed any relationship. I kept all my relationships intact. I just went somewhere else you know, just kept them at a distance. I never alienated myself from any of my family members. That I never want to see you again, or that I never spoke harsh words to them. I always kept a good relationship, but I just kept at a distance so I could do my Krishna conscious thing without being bothered by them. And then sometimes I would maintain, you know, have contact with them on my own terms. Yes. What is it?
That if the wife to be dutiful to follow the husband.
Yeah.
And isn't the husband also has his duty?
Yeah.
For the wife?
Yes, the husband has a duty to protect the wife. That means to give her all the material protection. And it also means to protect her from the repetition of birth and death. That's his duty. The husband is meant to become a spiritual master by taking shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. He's meant to be a guru, a siksha guru for his wife. By himself becoming the disciple of a bona fide guru, to become empowered to act as a siksha guru to liberate his wife from the cycle of birth and death. And if he cannot do so, he's failing to discharge his duty as a husband. So the wife, therefore, can say, well, you're not doing your duty. Why should I do mine? You say I should do my duty. Well, I say you should do yours. You do your duty and I'll do mine. Is that a deal? You see? If the husband wants the wife to do her duty, then she has a right to ask him to do his duty also. If they both do their duty, there's no problem. But if one wants to be dutiful and the other wants to be irresponsible, then there is a problem. Let both of them be dutiful, and then there's no problem.
Otherwise, it will be just ardu kukul nyaya.
Yeah.
He's holding the part he likes.
Yeah, half-hand logic again. Yes.
So isn't there some conflict or like, you know, views or anything like that?
No, just like on the mango tree, there, whether you get the fruit from this branch or from that branch, it is still mango fruit. What is the difficulty? So we are both situated on the Prabhupada tree.
Sometimes, you know, even the Prabhupada's disciples, their views are slightly different. I've seen that. And we ask, you know, questions, same question, we get different answers from different spiritual masters or different sannyasis. So that case is very common, actually. I've actually experienced
it. It means you have not yet had very... There are many... you can take one diamond and you can look at that diamond from many different angles of vision. It is still the same diamond. But you can look at it from this angle or you can look at it from that angle. So one guru, he will answer from one angle. Another guru will answer from another angle. If you're thinking that it's a different diamond, this means you have not yet had very deep understanding of our philosophy. But when you come to a deep understanding of Krishna conscious philosophy, then you will see there are many different angles of vision. That's all. It's the same diamond, seen from different angles of vision. And the spiritual master answers according to time, place, and circumstance also. You see, if you ask one question, you ask the same question, you may get a different answer because you're two different people. You see? And it depends on the way that it's asked also, and the assembly in which it's asked. If it's asked privately, or if it's asked in a public, everything, there's so many variables that can affect how something is answered. But the fact is that if you study Prabhupada's books very deeply, you will see that all the devotees are answering according to Prabhupada's books. They're all presenting the same teachings, just different angles. I hear many classes. I give me a lot of classes when I'm traveling, but also when I go to Vrindavan, I hear many lectures by my other godbrothers. And I never hear someone giving a different philosophy. We're all presenting Prabhupada's teachings. And Prabhupada is simply presenting Krishna's teachings. I do not see that there are different philosophies being presented, although there may be different ways of explaining the same principle. Prabhupada himself would give different instructions to different disciples. So it's according to time, place, and circumstance. It's simply a matter of having a deep enough understanding of the philosophy. A spiritual master is empowered by Krishna to connect the student with Krishna according to what is needed at that particular time in that particular situation. So I do not see any contradictions. If you see specific contradictions, you can tell me what they are. You have my email address now. You can write me. So-and-so said this and so-and-so said that. There are specific philosophical points that you feel that are being presented in contradictory ways. You bring it to my attention. And I explain to you. So that you can be satisfied. Questions, Marv? Questions have now run out. It is getting a little late. Yes?
Can a disciple be reinitiated if his or her spiritual master?
Can the disciple, if the spiritual master falls down, can a disciple be reinitiated?
Yes. That is there in the writings of our past acharyas. One should take some time to find a spiritual master who won't fall down. That's the best thing. Take some time to find a spiritual master that will not fall down. Then you won't have to worry about it getting reinitiated. Don't blindly take a guru.
Is it true that if the disciples don't follow regular principles, the guru can fall because of the disciples' sins?
Guru suffers. It's not that it's not that a guru will be forced to fall down if his disciples fall down. No. But a guru will suffer when his disciples commit sinful activities. That's a fact. It is described of a spiritual master is too eager for the sake of prestige to increase his number of disciples. In other words, if he has some motive that I want to become a famous guru with a lot of disciples, that can cause him to fall down. If his motive for initiating disciples is his own, fame. So we have to be very careful to find a guru who doesn't have any motive for being a guru, just in the mood of service, just wanting to help people, that's all. But it's not that a guru, that will not cause the guru to fall down. I've never read that. The spiritual master is fixed in Krishna consciousness. He's purely serving his spiritual master. He will never fall down. Even if his disciples fell down, that will not cause him to fall down. He will have to suffer. He may have to suffer disease or horrible nightmares sometimes, things like that. But he won't fall down from Krishna consciousness. He'll just have to take some of the karma from his disciples to suffer some of it. Questions more? All right then. So tomorrow is our last pleasant. Our last lecture will be tomorrow morning's lecture. We appreciate very much the wonderful loving kindness that you all have given to us. Mataji and I are both very, very happy to have been here by Krishna's arrangement and your kindness to be here in this wonderful Seva Dham in Suva, this abode of serving Krishna. Seva. Suva, Seva, Suva, Seva. So we hope that Krishna will bless us. We can come back. We're already being invited to come back, and so we're already thinking to add it to our agenda on our next around the world tour in the year 2000, next year, 2006. So we'll be in contact with your leaders here sometime around July to work out the details of the schedule after we finish our European and North American tours. So now we have some prasadam. Everyone can come forward and get some Radha-Dhamma prasadam and some other prasadam here from our preaching person. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.